Hello, my name is Chip Lang, and you are listening to Total EM. This is podcast number 7. Now, 7 in some cultures is seen as a lucky number, and so with luck, you can't talk about it without a little bit of poker being involved. That's right, the poker trial, where we compare ketofol to propofol. Now, if you've been listening to our last couple of podcasts, those are number 5 and 6, you would have listened to us talking to Min Lekong, who is known on Twitter as Ketamin. And he has brought up a couple of interesting points in those last few talks, mainly about ketamine, and we actually talked about the poker trial in there. Now, before we get too far involved with the paper, the poker trial, I'd like to just mention a few things. So right now, as I'm recording, it is August 29th, 2016. And on this day, I recorded interviews with three different individuals about three different programs. We talked to Dr. Jeff Jarvis, we talked to Dr. Nicholas Kreins, and we talked to Dr. Jim DeCanto. These three separate interviews are going to be things that we're going to post over the next few months. And with the one of the individuals we were talking to, he suggested that we go ahead and maybe split them up and kind of mix them up a little bit and maybe talk about some of the relevant trials in between. So that's exactly what I'd like to do. We're going to try it out, and if you don't like it, please let me know, and we will go back to our format where we'll have the interviews paired up together. Otherwise, like I said, that's what we're going to get to look forward to over the next few weeks as we're introducing all those trials and in conversations. And with that being said, we are going to continue spacing it out to being new content once a week. We may throw in a few other things in between there, and we may do some stuff just on the blog site. So keep a close eye on things. And if you haven't done so yet, go to totalem.org and register for the newsletter. I promise I don't spam you. In fact, I don't think I've even sent a newsletter yet. But you do get the updates every time we post something new. And that is, like I said, worthwhile, something to think about. Now, without further ado, let's talk about the actual trial. So the title of the paper is Propofol or Ketofol for Procedural Sedation and Analgesia in Emergency Medicine, the POKER Study, a Randomized Double-Blind Clinical Trial. So if you know me and you've listened to what I've done, there are a few elements I like to borrow from BEAM, which is the best evidence in emergency medicine, and the SGEM with Ken Milne. Now, some of the things we're going to incorporate in there are some of the same concepts. I'm going to change it around in a few ways, but ultimately it's a lot of the same stuff. And one of the things that I like to do is we like to tie in a case. So our case is going to be a 32-year-old, otherwise healthy, non-pregnant female who comes to your ED for a shoulder dislocation. A medical student initially assesses the patient and plans for procedural sedation to perform the reduction of the patient's left dislocated shoulder. While preparing for the procedural sedation, the student asks about using propofol or the new idea of combining ketamine with propofol in a 1-to-1 ratio. The student wants to know if one of these will be better than the other, given the ketofol has theoretical differences in benefits versus propofol alone. Okay, so let's talk about the background. Now, procedural sedation is common in the ED and requires certain medications such as ketamine or propofol. Each medication has its own benefits and risks. Common issues with ketamine are hypertension, tachycardia, vomiting, laryngospasm, and emergence delirium. Propofol has been associated with such complications as hypotension, loss of airway reflexes, hypoventilation, apnea, and hypoxia. There have been an antiemetic effect found with propofol, and ketamine helps with maintaining the airway reflexes as well as provide analgesia. There has been a hypothesis that the two medications combined may lead to fewer adverse events compared to propofol alone, given that they will, quote-unquote, balance each other out. However, previous single-center randomized control trials have not demonstrated such a reduction in respiratory adverse events. And if you're not as familiar with propofol and ketamine, you can go to different sites such as Propofology, or you can go to the site that Min had talked about in the last podcast. Just go to those types of things, look at them, they're really worthwhile. So what's our clinical question? Does ketofol in a 1-to-1 ratio, meaning one part propofol to one part ketamine, lead to further adverse respiratory events requiring intervention by the sedating physician compared to propofol alone. So what's our reference? Well, our population is a bunch of patients recruited in a multi-center trial from three Australian hospitals if they were at least 18 years old and required deep procedural sedation, according to the treating emergency physician, for a painful procedure. There were a lot of exclusion criteria, as what seems to be our trend with randomized control trials currently. So, exclusion criteria included patients unable to provide informed consent, pregnant, allergic to ketamine, allergic to soy or eggs, had a reduced level of consciousness or known raised ICP or intracranial pressure, had uncontrolled hypertension defined as a blood pressure greater than 160 over 90 millimeters over mercury, abdominal aortic aneurysm, symptomatic ischemic heart disease, heart failure or recent myocardial infarction or MI, or other severe systemic disease as defined by the American Society of Anesthesiologists, making them class 4 or greater. Now, the intervention was ketofol for procedural sedation, given a 1-to-1 ratio of ketamine and propofol. The comparison was propofol alone to provide deep procedural sedation. Our outcome was adverse respiratory events requiring physician intervention. The author's conclusions was that ketofol and propofol resulted in a similar incidence of adverse respiratory events requiring the intervention of the sedating physician. Although propofol resulted in more hypotension, the clinical relevance of this is questionable, and both agents were associated with high levels of patient satisfaction. Now, we'd like to go through our quality checklist for randomized clinical trials. There are 11 points, and we will go through them all pretty quickly. Number 1. The study population included or focused on those in the ED? Yes. 2. The patients were adequately randomized? Yes. 3. The randomization process was concealed? Yes, this was a double-blinded randomized clinical trial. 4. The patients were analyzed in the groups to which they were randomized? Yes. 5. The study patients were recruited consecutively, i.e., no selection bias? No, as patients were recruited by convenient sample. 6. The patients in both groups were similar with respect to prognostic factors? Yes. 7. All participants, patients, clinicians, outcome assessors, were unaware of group allocation? Yes, as can be assessed, since two individuals who mixed the medication were otherwise not involved. More on that in a little bit. 8. All groups were treated equally except for the intervention. Not necessarily, as the prophylactic oxygen and pre-procedural opiates were not controlled. However, you can go to the actual paper and you can see that it's similarly balanced. It's not too different, such as what number of patients got morphine or what number of patients got fentanyl. 9. Follow-up was complete, i.e. at least 80% for both groups. Yes. 10. All patient-important outcomes were considered. Yes. Number 11. The treatment effect was large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant. Not necessarily, but it is consistent with the other papers that reviewed the same situation, that and they also did not see a benefit of ketofol versus propofol. All right, so what are our key results? There were 591 patients that were in the study, for which there were 296 in the propofol group and 295 in the ketofol group. 4 patients in the propofol group and 14 in the ketofol group did not get sedation after being randomized. And again, you can go through the actual study paper and you see why. There's nothing that's really jumping out as a red flag, although it is kind of odd that there were 10 more patients in the ketofol group versus the propofol group. This meant that there were 573 patients, with 292 receiving propofol and 281 getting ketofol. 5% of the propofol group and 3% of the ketofol group had an adverse respiratory event. That was the primary outcome, with an absolute difference of 2%, a 95% confidence interval of -2% to 5%. Patients receiving propofol were more likely to become hypotensive, 8% versus 1% with a difference of 7%, 95% confidence interval of 4 to 10%. Patient satisfaction was very high in both groups, a 10 out of 10 with an interquartile range of 10 to 10 out of 10. Although the ketoprolol group was more likely to experience severe emergence delirium, 5% versus 2% with an absolute difference of 3%, and a 95% confidence interval of 0.4% to 6%, they did have lower pain scores at 30 minutes post-procedure. Alright, so now it's time for the key points of debate. So as mentioned, this was a convenience sample. When we do a convenience sample, there is always a risk for bias, something to just keep in the mind, back of your head there. The authors explained that the reason for the convenience sample was because of staffing limitations, which is give or take. I mean, it's something to keep in mind that it wasn't something necessarily controlled, but it does mean that certain patients are getting missed. Recruitment was less likely at peak times for the department and overnight since the study mandated two physicians and a nurse in the study. Those are the people involved with the procedure because you needed the nurse overwatch, you need the sedating physician, and then the performing physician. There was also a separate physician and nurse that were independent to it that were the ones responsible for mixing the medication. That means there are five people who were essentially tied up in this study, and there had to be five unique people in that study, which is a lot of resources. And, you know, if you were to use this in a smaller center, could very much take up basically your whole support staff. There was a risk of unblinding given the design. Ketoprolol has only had an established stability of 3 hours. Due to the short time and restrictions from Australian law, medications had to be mixed in the department. That means that given the proximity of those who are mixing it, i.e. the physician and nurse who are preparing it, unblinding was possible and most likely would have not be avoidable. However, to help evaluate for this, patients and providers involved could have filled a questionnaire or statement on what they thought was the medication or medications that were given in the study. And also keep in mind that some of the side effects of these medications are going to be unique to ketamine, and so that could be another potential issue and could have further unblinded. All right, there is another potential issue with confounders with some of the liberties given to the staff. This meaning that physicians in the study were allowed certain options of treatment that were not restricted by the study protocol. For example, prophylactic oxygen delivery and pre-procedural opiates could have been given, and they did not require a washout period like other studies have done. In measures such as adverse respiratory events and patient satisfaction of pain control, respectively, this could have led to confounders. For example, prophylactic oxygen would decrease the risk of hypoxia. So it's, again, something just to keep in mind that there could have been a difference as a result of that. Another point, and this is kind of one of my big ones, is that not all of the study had objective measures. So within the study design, adverse respiratory events were defined as a hypoxia, which was considered an SpO2 of 93% or less, hypoventilation defined as respiratory rate of 8 or less breaths per minute, apnea, which was no capnography trace of 15 or more seconds, laryngospasm or aspiration, which was defined as persistent hypoxia plus infiltrates on chest radiograph, and the kicker, occurrence of a rescue intervention. So what did they define rescue interventions as? Well, that included increasing oxygen flow rate, airway repositioning and opening, use of an airway adjunct, a bag valve mask ventilation, or intubation, which is aligned with the Quebec criteria for all this. Now, with the exception of on the Quebec criteria, they did not include vigorous tactile stimulation, as this could have been even more confusing since it's sometimes used to measure depth of sedation. Rescue interventions have differing levels of importance. As you can kind of see, there's a whole broad range from intubation to airway adjuncts to just increasing the oxygen rate. With that, that kind of acts as a confounder too of how important is what and when are you going to pull the trigger for this. So with certain groups, you may be more likely, if you're a certain provider, to say, no, I'm going to go ahead, I'm going to start increasing it now versus waiting out the storm a little bit. In all instances of adverse respiratory events, such events were less likely in the ketoprolol group versus the propofol group, which is worth kind of noting that trend, but again, not statistically significant. Even with these limitations, the findings are consistent with other trials, which did not show a statistically significant difference when comparing ketofol to propofol. Alright, so another point. Secondary findings may not have been as important as they may seem. For example, although there was statistical significance in hypotension, was it really clinically significant? Hypotension was self-limited and usually was easily corrected. However, it serves to remind us that these patients are more susceptible to hypotension when propofol is used alone. One of the concerns with ketamine traditionally is the risk of emergence delirium, but this was low compared to other studies that have used ketamine by itself, not combined with propofol. This difference can mean that ketofol, ketamine being combined with propofol, may help lower the risk similar to other medications such as midazolam being added to a patient giving ketamine. It is worth remembering that the study was performed in Australia, and although satisfaction scores were high, this may not be the same for patients in other countries. Another nice secondary point that they briefly mentioned. Alright, so let's compare conclusions here. So we agree with the conclusion that patients receiving ketofol and propofol had a similar incidence of adverse respiratory events requiring intervention. Although there were lower rates to all events in the ketofol group, it was not statistically significant. Also, the hypotension was more likely not clinically significant, but should serve as a reminder that this does occur with propofol. So what's our bottom line? At this time, it does not appear that ketofol has a benefit in decreasing adverse respiratory events when compared to propofol alone. However, there may be other benefits, such as adding ketamine to provide analgesia or reducing potential complications with ketamine, such as emergence reaction when adding propofol. One must use caution, though, given the limited evidence of benefit and potential risk of complications when adding the two medications together. So what's our case resolution? Well, you discuss with both your student and the patient the plan for treatment, along with the patient's options. Everyone agrees to try propofol and giving an opiate such as fentanyl for pain control. After providing sedation, you help the student perform the shoulder reduction in a safe and controlled environment without adverse event. So what's our clinical application? At this time, the evidence seems limited for the benefits of ketofol. However, the combination of propofol and ketamine are being researched in other settings, such as transporting psychiatric patients in the pre-hospital environment versus using ketamine alone in the acutely agitated patient. Yes, men, we're talking about you and others who are doing that same kind of research. Although there does not appear to be adverse events in ketofol, as demonstrated in this study and in others, combining two medications means the providers using this combination must be careful and use caution to reduce the risk of complications. So what do I tell my patient? When it comes to painful procedures, we have different ways in managing both your pain and the way we let you sleep in the procedure. We will use a medication called propofol that allows you to sleep through the procedure. Another medication we can add is called ketamine, which helps both with pain and with sleeping during the procedure. Both work quickly and leave the body quickly. Instead of ketamine, we can also use other pain medications such as morphine and fentanyl, which work differently on your body but should also help with the pain. As a quick aside to this, I'd like to mention that ketofol may have its benefits if you have not already given analgesia, such as fentanyl and morphine prior. So if you've already given opiates, I know some people, if they've already given opiates and it seems to be working well, they'll just stick with the propofol. That makes sense to me. Other people, if they haven't had any opiates on board yet, or say the opiates aren't controlling their pain, it makes sense to add ketamine with the propofol. Provide a little different analgesia with a different route, see if that works a little bit better. I'm not saying that one drug is better than the other as far as combination at this point, but there are certainly limitations, and really we're going to need some more research before we can really say if one route truly is better than the other. And quite honestly, we may never find that one is better than the other. But there are certain patients that probably ketamine is more appropriate in than others, and we need to keep that in the back of our minds. So with that, we want to thank you for listening to the podcast and reading the blog. Please let me know if there is anything we need to change or improve. We really want to do whatever we can to make this the best project. Please email us at thetotalem@gmail.com or see us at Twitter or Facebook. Again, you look for us as just Total EM. That's TOTAL space EM. We hope to talk to you soon. Until then, continue to provide total care everywhere.